Josh.
That's right. The post-finale edition of The Wiggle Room is here. I am Rob Cesternino, joined by Josh Wiggler. Sadly, not in person for this go-round. Josh, how are you?
Man, I missed a doozy, didn't I?
Yeah,
I cannot wait to hear how this played in person. I'm very bummed to have missed it.
lots of fun stuff to talk about. Super polarizing season. Super polarizing ending. But
you have the Jessica Lewis, yeah, think sound drop ready to go?
Yeah,
because I feel like it's apropos.
Yeah, here you go. So some would say a very polarizing season of Survivor.
Yes,
there it is.
Yeah. So we got a lot to talk about here today. So we're going to hear everything that Josh has to say. Congratulations to Chris Underwood, the winner of Survivor. We have a postmortem on the edge of extinction as a season, as a twist. We're going to look ahead to everything going on with season 39, the Island of Idols. We got our first look at Boston Rob and Sandra as Survivor teachers.
So happy I don't have to fully sit on that anymore. I'm thrilled to be able to talk about that just a little bit.
Josh was out on location in Fiji and can finally tell us a little bit about that. We'll get into that here in this hour or so, and very excited about all that. Plus, we've got so much coverage already. Stephen Fishback and Hannah Shapiro had the Know-It-Alls live after the episode.
So great. They were great. They were really good. Hannah's a natural. That was really, really fun.
She was really, really fun. I listened to it on my way home from being at the post finale last night, which is fun.
I mean, like, that is something that should just, like, we should stop down for a second and just, like, kind of worship at the altar of the production capabilities of RHAP. That you not
Scott
only got
St.
that
Pierre
up so
was,
fast,
was
you got the
working
up,
overtime.
Scott.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Scott, unbelievable job.
Kudos to Scott St. Pierre, who then also got the final six interview podcast up also before I got into my house last night. And then also Scott's been working on the video during the day today. So Scott's been really working overtime. And also then is going to have this podcast too. So Scott is going to be very happy that the Survivor finale is over. So
I understand.
All that. And then I also talked to Stephen Fishback this morning. We've never done this where we did the Know-It-Alls meet up the morning after the finale. And I talked to Stephen Fishback and we took some phone calls on FanCred, on the FanCred app this morning. All that up is in the Rob Has a Podcast feed, robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. And we appreciate your feedback and star ratings here, even at the end of a Survivor season. But Josh, some sad news to open up the show. We'll have a lot of stuff to talk about with the finale. But this just happened this afternoon, where that we found out that one of the contestants from Survivor China, WWE entertainer Ashley Massaro, has died today.
Yes,
very sad.
Yeah, I saw that headline making the rounds really shortly before you and I hopped on the podcast. Even I was very surprised by it. I'm very sad by that. She was 39 years old. That is way too young to lose anyone. I just voted out second in Survivor China.
Yes.
If I'm remembering right, if I'm remembering right, maybe some sparks with Dave Loco.
Mm-hmm.
is how I recall how some of that played out. Very sad, and just obviously all of our best to her family and her loved ones that she leaves behind.
Yeah, we don't know a lot at this time, but very sad, very young, and thoughts and prayers to her family and everybody that got to know her in through the Survivor family as well. So not news that we were expecting in the least today.
No, not at all. Not at all.
All right. So no easy way to segue, but we need to talk about everything that happened last night. And Josh, you and I talked on the Wiggle Room earlier this week, and we outlined the scenarios for the season, and it was Rick Devens versus the field.
Yeah.
And you had said that, you know what? I'll take the field when all signs were pointing to Devins, to Rick Devins winning the season. Oh my God, the Survivor editors, how obvious can they make it that it's all things Rick Devins. Something told you that there was something amiss, that maybe it's not pointing to Rick Devins. And we even got to talking about, well, perhaps the reason why we're so focused on Rick Devins, if it's not Rick Devins, maybe the person who ultimately is going to win this game is on the edge of extinction. And right. That led us to Ream. And we fantasized for a good 25 minutes about...
Only on the air. I mean, yeah. Off the air, I fantasized about it every hour afterwards. So
about Ream winning the season.
Yes.
But we weren't that far off with Ream winning the season. It was Chris Underwood who comes back and then goes on to win. First, let me ask you, when you felt strongly Rick was not going to win, what were you seeing?
And it wasn't even that I felt strongly that Rick was not going to win. It was more like, what is the other possible case? What is the other possible case for why somebody could win this season of Survivor instead of Devins? Because there was so much narrative energy behind him. He was on this Dree Bergen-esque run. And it turned out that, as I tweeted, it turned out he was not Dree Bergen. He was Devins in that fire-making challenge. So that was the great twist. But it seemed like there was no one who was like actively still in the game that would be able to challenge him. Like I didn't really see the clear path for even somebody as savvy as Victoria or Gavin or Lauren or Julie. You know, it just was not adding up. And we know that we're coming back into this with somebody is going to be returning from the edge of extinction. And if it's somebody who we already know a decent amount, then maybe they don't have to show us a ton from the edge of extinction because we'll just automatically be able to click with that person. Like if it's somebody who was voted out recently or it's one of these returning players, I could really see like that epic 2.5-hour movie of Survivor, the Edge of Extinction finale, playing out where Devins is taken out by somebody who we do have some connection to already, and they have this sort of like Phoenix from the Ashes type of story. But in no universe did I imagine that the person who would take that honor would be someone we did not know at all, really, outside of some Twitter humor and some doing it for Monica jokes from First One Out. It is someone who we really, really hardly saw at all on the show until the biggest episode ever, biggest one-off episode ever for a successful Survivor player, probably in the history of the show. And obviously me and the rest of Survivor Nation, I assume we are all still kind of like
shook.
We're shook. Yeah, we're reeling. We're
it's
reeling.
Such a wild night. And I was saying this last night that, I mean, to look at the sliding doors of this thing, where if Joe gets his ball into the second hole, I don't think that Chris even gets mentioned at the finale,
yeah,
at the reunion.
Not. Of course not.
I think he's there with,
absolutely not.
With Eric and Keith being people that Jeff doesn't even mention in that. People don't get questions now. It's sort of like a Oscar thank you of like, there's so many other people that have to thank. Victoria, thank you for being so exciting all season long. And people would forget that you were there. That's how good of a player you are. War Dog, you drove so much story the entire season.
I loved your Wolverine sideburns. I liked it when you looked like a Japanese anime villain.
Yeah,
that was pretty cool.
So if you're lucky, you get an acknowledgement now. No more, a question is a lot. But just
that's a smart tactic, by the way, I think, for probes. Like,
rattle through it.
Yeah, limit the ability for the players to speak. You're doing well on time. You're curbing some of those complaints from people like, you don't talk to the people enough. It's like, yeah, well, I'm talking at them, but I'm still acknowledging their existence.
So, yeah, because so many times in the evolution strategy that, the last 5 minutes of reunion is like, all right, real quick, to the back row. Right. All right, real quick. but not to get too distracted. So sure. Chris Underwood, the most unlikely of people, or among the most unlikely of people to
from a story perspective, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
From a story perspective. So, Josh, we've seen all the reactions from Twitter. What is your reaction to all of this?
Do you have the clip handy of the time that you talked about The Walking Dead and Rick Grimes leaving The Walking Dead on the Wiggle Room, and it just made me laugh for like a solid 20 seconds? Do you have that handy?
I laugh because you kid.
Yeah, I mean that's basically it. That's
yeah.
What do you want me to say? Great for Chris Underwood.
Yeah,
I am thrilled for Chris as a human being. Chris entered Survivor. He entered. He's the last person that I interviewed during a very, very long day of interviews in the preseason. He comes in. I'm kind of like looking at the clock because sun is going down and everybody else at the junket is waiting for me to finish one more interview before anyone can go home. And Chris Underwood rolls up singing the Wiggle Room theme song, ready to talk about how we kept earworming him with Monica Culpepper in the evolution of strategy. Really, really excited to nerd out about Survivor. Vastly more excited to play Survivor. And what was hopefully going to be like a quick 15-minute interview ended up being one of the longest of the whole session. So I know firsthand I had seen the wide-eyed enthusiasm from this person who was getting to live out his dream, was putting a lot of pressure on himself to, as he said, play this perfect game.
And Josh, to add it, so I went back, I listened to your interview with Chris from First One Out today, and he mentioned that he wanted to play the perfect game.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that's what he wanted.
And can I play, I pulled the clip from Please, your interview with Chris Underwood, and there was a couple of interesting things. He talked about the that he's a salesman, and he had these tactics from being a salesman. He wasn't going to tell anybody about that. He was going to tell people that he was this dive instructor, and he teaches people how to dive. But this is towards the end of your conversation with Chris Underwood.
So in terms of like the outdoorsy stuff, you're going to say you're a dive instructor, so you're going to live up to the hype when it comes to the water. You feel good about that?
Yeah, I feel good about that.
Final Four challenge with the fire and everything, you feel okay?
Yeah, I feel good about that. I practice making fire with Flynn. It's a lot different than with matches.
Sure.
You know, it's different, but I was able to make it successfully, and for me, good thing is I'm pretty early. I get up early. Back home, like I'm an early riser. I'm up at like 5 in the morning.
Oh wow!
Like early 5:30 in the morning, and that out here is actually pretty good because if you're the first one up, you're the first one who gets to practice making fire. You're the first one getting that started again for the day's work, and it's gonna be a little time to think through my game, but also practice because I sure as hell don't want to end up at the Final Four and not be able to make it. Man, that would suck. But it preparation. You know, don't be a Laurel. Don't be Laurel.
Poor Laurel.
I don't know how to make fire.
You know how to make fire.
Dude, I know how to make fire, yeah.
Wow, this winner is like get him.
Well, I'm at it, dude.
Get him,
I can't
wait. Oh, my goodness.
Hey, for Monica.
Do it for Monica.
For Monica.
Into the microphone. Who are you going to win for?
I'm winning it for Monica.
Beautiful.
Hey.
We got it. Good stuff, man. Go crush it, okay? I'll see you on the other side.
Hey, bro. There he goes. How about that?
Winning it for Monica.
I guess I got to get the guy a wombat hat now, right?
I told him last night that I told him, and don't worry, we're going to get you a wombat's hat. And he said that's all I ever wanted.
Yeah, it's the crown, right?
Yeah.
it's only fitting that this stinker of a season gets such a stinky hat.
I don't know. I'm here for it now. I had the best time at the finale. This was, you know, I've been to a bunch of these now. And for me, this was one of the most fun shows that I've been to. And, you know, the room was really rooting for it was very pro Devins. Devins was killing, but then once and then they were very pro Chris, and then between Devins and Chris, and once Devins was gone, the audience was very very much for Chris in the room.
even though he was the Devon Slayer.
Even though, but he that really played big in the room where he made the fire and went into the fire making challenge and
he takes the necklace off and everything like that.
It blew the top off the place. And so, really, really exciting stuff from Chris, but a polarizing outcome for many of the fans. But it's so interesting to me in terms of that we debated for almost 3 weeks on the podcast, across the internet, where the Survivor Facebook page was Rick Devens is the best, Rick Devens is awesome, Rick Devens is killing it, everybody else stinks, Rick Devens is the best. And then the Survivor Reddit page, Rick Devens is the worst, I hate Rick Devens, Rick Devens is ruining Survivor. And
Rick Devens.
We end up with this really wild outcome where almost nobody is happy with the outcome that happens. Where people, the people that posting on Reddit were wanting a Gavin or Victoria or a Lauren win, and the people at Facebook wanted Rick Devens to win, and none of that happens. And here's Chris. And
nobody even knows. I think Gordon Holmes had a great tweet, or I maybe he said in his recap, it's like, this morning I would not have been able to pick Chris Underwood out of a lineup. And my advice to him, if he doesn't remember Chris moving forward, just look for Superman. That's mm-hmm. the guy.
And I told this to Chris last night that he did such an amazing job of hiding this from everybody. The show, whether you think it's good or bad, did a fantastic job of hiding this. And you talked about that quote from Jeff about it being a murder mystery. We're not going to know who did it. And I have to say also, RIP Edgick. Also, by the way, but for Chris Underwood, that I told him you did an amazing job, because I thought he came in so hot in more ways than one, in first one out, of that, boy, this guy is a Survivor nerd. He loves Survivor, was geeking out about doing it for Monica, and boy, he doesn't post anything. Anything about Survivor. This just must have been
a brutal experience.
Stepped on his dream, spit him back out, and now he's just totally over it. He got married during the season. He's like, I'm on the show right now. I don't even want to be around. And just, I want nothing to do with Survivor. And he was playing possum.
Yeah, and great job on him. I think he really played that role really marvelously. I wonder, what kind of conversations he may have had with the producers about, obviously we know that this is a strange situation and you're probably not going to be on the show very much. Just really go low key and you're really going to pop once you hit it in the finale.
Saw this coming. Yeah. Nobody had this. And so... I love that we're all surprised. That's what I love. That's what I love about this, and that's why I'm very excited to talk about all this. But
yes,
there is also, we have an issue here about the idea of that we spent many, many weeks and many podcasts. I'm sure we had a lot of fun talking through all of this, but
not always, but
I did.
I know.
I did.
Kidding. Yeah.
But we are left with a situation where, what did a bulk of what happened matter to everything?
Yeah. It's a Shaggy Dog season. You hear about the Shaggy Dog story where it's just like, it's going on and on and on and on, and it kind of ends pointlessly. It's the aristocrats, right? Mm-hmm. It's a super elaborate, long, expansive series of dirty jokes that just get dirtier and dirtier and more vulgar and vulgar. And it just ends with a completely random punchline. That's what this is. And, you know, there's a contingent of Survivor viewers that love themselves a train wreck season. You know, mm-hmm. I have been all aboard the San Juan del Sur hype train for years now, from the jump. I loved that season. They're the people who would die for Gabon, right? Like, they're the people who will swear up and down that that is the best season of all time. We talked about that in the Evolution of Strategy. And I think that there's an instinct, at least right now, that this is a season that Edge of Extinction kind of fits in that mold. I'm seeing a bit of those takes of people who were like, I absolutely loved that. People who have like the same enthusiasm that you just spoke about it with, without any equivocation, without any reservations, are just like completely enamored with the left turn that it takes at the end of the season. And I mean, I don't fully know where I'm at with it all. I mean, I appreciate an outlier of an ending. I'm very happy for the guy. I'm very happy for Chris as a human being. I will probably appreciate this season more if it remains an outlier.
Mm-hmm.
If this is a season of Survivor that is that there is no equal to it before, and certainly if there is no equal to it from this point forward, because I think that this this outcome really exemplifies why The Edge of Extinction was an awful twist. I appreciate the swing, and Survivor is on its 38th season. It's approaching its 20th anniversary. They got to try stuff. I totally get that. But for so many reasons, and we can spend time getting into them, I just think it's a really bad twist, and I don't think that Survivor can handle it. I don't think that Survivor, as a 42-minute unit of television per week, can handle this twist, because you either have to completely hide your winner from the audience in a situation like this, if it's somebody who was, you know, knocked out of the game so early on and has no story to show, that you're going to completely make them invisible, or you have to find a way to make them more visible. And now, are you tipping your hand too much? And I don't know where I come down on that. Like, there's a big part of me that feels like, sure, in the murder mystery analogy, like, you know, you can look at like True Detective and who's the Yellow King. And like, it's not like, you know, it's not somebody that you were really looking at. Like, you know, that happens from time to time. It's the, you know, it's the guy at the coffee shop in the first, you know, half of the second episode, or whatever, you know, you want to say. And that's basically how they treated it here with Chris. And is that enough? For me, it's not. For me, it's not. For me, I don't think that it's really playing fair, but I don't know what other options they had when, on top of the fact that The Edge of Extinction is such a complication, Survivor itself has become so complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all these returning players that are in the mix as well. There's
right.
just so many different masters to serve. So on top of that, you also now have to serve the edgelord Chris Underwood as the winner of the season, that this is another master that you're going to have to serve. And you just kind of, the choice is to ignore him completely underneath the weight of everything else. I mean, it's great for a laugh, and I'm very happy for him and his new family that he will be, you know, starting with him and his wife, who've just gotten married, and they're going to have a very happy life together with $1 million in their pocket.
And that's
wonderful. But I think it kind of really sucks as far as an outcome for a season of Survivor, at least if this is any indication of where we're going to be going moving forward. If Edge of Extinction is just kind of, this is it and it's done, then I'll live with it. But if this is a sign of the times, then I'm pretty troubled by it.
Well, I can't speak to the Edge of Extinction part of it. I don't know if necessarily if you talk to, you know, the powers that be, or Jeff or Matt, and that, you know, and really ask them, like, you know, did this work great? Was this, you know, the kind of outcome that you were hoping for? Who knows what the real answer is? But I can tell you that something that Jeff said last night, talking to the crowd before the, you know, he came up, and there's a great warm-up guy that is at the live shows. And Jeff told the audience, like, hey, I just want to take a moment and thank our cast for what they've done this season. And you guys see it every week, and you know, you see what they're doing out there, and that there are these purists out there that say, hey, get rid of all the idols and the advantages, and just, you are dreaming, because we're not going to do it, because that's what makes these guys be able to play the kind of game that they played.
Yeah.
So Jeff was defiant to the purists last night.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think he likes to push the show.
Yeah.
And he's pushing it in a direction that is interesting for him. And that's his right. He's the executive producer. He's the host. He wants to hang in there. And if he's going to be hanging in there, he needs to make the show interesting for himself. I totally get that. I also severely disagree with it insofar as how, you know, this is any kind of a direction that Survivor should go in. I, you know, call me a purist if that's what you want, but I think that Survivor can be experimental, and it can still be about the sacred bond of you go on an island, you vote someone out, they're out of the game, and that's it. I don't know. that note of defiance that you're stressing, it concerns me a little bit. It absolutely does.
I will say that the thing overall that bothered me the most about the season, when we go back and really look at it, I do not think that Chris Underwood should have returned from the edge of extinction with any kind of hidden immunity idol. And Chris Underwood,
that was a really, 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 really terrible choice. That was
Chris Underwood
bad.
Played amazingly, and we could talk about, you know, that he did make more moves in 3 days than, you know, some people make in a season. That being said, for him to have the opportunity to have immunity at one of the two votes that he was going to be involved with, that to me, I felt like that this made it a little bit too much of a layup for Chris. And I don't know if that was really explained to the jury, and I'd have to go back and I did a rewatch of the episode, but I didn't get up to the final tribal council. I don't know if the jury knew that the idol that Chris played in that wild tribal council where two fake idols get played, two real idols get played. I don't know. Was that at the jury, at the reunion show, or in front of the jury about did Devin's give the idol back to Chris? It's kind of a blur. Either way,
yeah, I think that's the reunion. But during the final tribal council, Gavin brings it up, where Gavin's like, I think it's kind of unfair that Chris gets to come back into the game, and he has this, you know, he has this idol that was given to him.
Yeah,
and if he doesn't have that, he's voted out at the final five.
Yeah, Chris gets three votes at the final five, and then is ultimately voted out, and I think that's probably how
way too far.
Yeah, that you know, you I mean, how many idols are we gonna have with five people in the game?
You know what, though, I did appreciate this, in fairness to Survivor. Like, I appreciated how much they kind of allowed Gavin to talk about that stuff in, like, in the finished product of the show. I really appreciate that from Survivor, that they are, you know, that they had to know that this was going to be controversial, that, you know, a guy who makes it 39 days without getting a single vote cast against him is going to get four votes to win, but not enough against a person who's only played 12 or 13 days of Survivor. And they allow that person who has played a really, really good social game, if a quiet game, to talk about the vast difference between what it meant for him to, you know, the high degree of difficulty that it took for him to get to where he was versus the comparable road that Chris had to take.
Yeah.
And some of the things that Gavin was saying in that final tribal council were indictments of concept issues from the part of mm-hmm. Survivor. He's talking about that idol, and that's being allowed to be front and center. So I really appreciated that. I think when you're, I didn't get a chance to talk to Gavin during the phoners that I got to do. It was a pretty limited set just because of, I'm really very deeply in Game of Thrones. So I was happy to do the ones that I was able to do. But from reading what I've been able to read and from listening to like your talk with Gavin and some of your talks with some of the other people and some of the interviews with other people, I feel like people are putting on like a pretty good face about this, but like you can like feel a little bit of that tension underneath of like, man, that's second idol. Like the 8 out of 10 eye roll, from Lauren O'Connell that you could hear on the podcast.
Yeah.
Like some of that stuff is just too much.
Right.
Don't get rid of the immunity idol. That's fine. The immunity idol has been a part of Survivor forever.
Yeah.
But this level, it's too far for me. And if this continues to be like, if that's what's getting deepened, the deeper we go into Survivor, you know, this is the first season in a long time where I really, it's pretty clear on the podcast, I think, but I was just losing interest.
Yeah.
And I will continue to lose interest if this is sort of like the deeper the direction that the franchise is going. I'm here for the social game. I'm here for the people, you know, slugging it out with votes and duplicity and the occasional idol and advantage mischief. But that idol that Chris came back with was really rubbed me
and
the wrong
let's
way.
Not forget that we had a season considered by many a top five season, only
considered by me, yeah, absolutely, best all time,
only like one edition ago.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
I do come down higher on the edge of extinction than you do, because I do think that this did turn out to be a really wild ride, and
are you going to have any interest in like rewatching
it?
I actually
am,
really?
Because I want to see if there was a little bit more there. I'm eager to see some of the moves that I might have missed the first time through by the likes of the Gavins and Victorias and Laurens, and I want to see, especially with Gavin, if there was more there that I missed the first time through. I want to see if there was any more clues about Chris Underwood throughout this. So
yeah.
I am going to enjoy a rewatch, and I do think it's going to be a fun one when we eventually get to the Evolution of Strategy volume 4.
It's going to be great.
Now, that being said, I don't want any more Edge of Extinction in terms of a twist. For me, though, as a one-off, that this was fine. This was the wild ride. And I think it ended up going down almost as we expected it. I mean, you and I both made Joe Anglim our winner pick. And
exactly. We were one ball away.
Yeah. And the scenario that I said was, a lot of people felt like that this was a season that was really Joe's wheelhouse of, okay, well, Joe will get voted out at the merge, and then he'll come back and then, win a couple of challenges and get to the final three and win this thing. And it wasn't Joe that did it. It was Chris.
Right. But this is, you know, that really speaks. So the Ponderosa videos are out.
Yes, I haven't watched them yet, but I do plan on.
I have.
Okay.
I have. Yes.
And I do plan on doing a deeper dive before I get into our This Week in Survivor coming up on Monday.
Yeah, so the Ponderosa videos are out. We were wondering if those are going to exist. They exist. They're real.
Yeah.
They happened. And they're kind of like in a jumbled order on the YouTube page. So I feel like I watched a little bit out of sequence. I think that this is the sequence that you're supposed to watch them.
Can you give us the watch order of if you were going to go back and watch all 22 MCU movies, what's the order to watch them?
I this may be like lightly out of order, but I think it's pretty close, and you should be able to get a sensible narrative through this. It starts with the cast-offs reflect on leaving. The next one you should watch is the cast-offs weigh in. The one you should watch after that is cast-offs feast at Ponderosa. Then you should watch the cast-offs form deep bonds. Then you should watch David Wright does his best Jeff Probst impression. It's not bad. It's pretty good. Then there's the cast-offs finally get to decompress at Ponderosa.
Can you tweet this? Yes.
Then it's straightforward Victoria, Lauren, and Devins, and then you're done with Ponderosa. So the way that Ponderosa is done this year, obviously because like everybody just like arrives at Ponderosa en masse, it's a gigantic cluster of people. They have the first several Ponderosa videos dedicated to this as sort of like an ensemble piece. It's like the Avengers of Ponderosas, where each one is this massive team up. I gotta tell you, this is one of the best Ponderosa series I've ever seen.
Okay.
It's great. It, you know, the fact that it plays as a binge, it really plays like a documentary behind the scenes on Survivor and shines a light on some of these people who we didn't get to know very well across the way, or some people who we've known pretty well in terms of the returning players. Aubrey's a bit of a star in this. She has a lot of really sassy moments. At a barbecue, coleslaw is indeed mentioned, and David is just like he's just like got like a drink in his hand the whole way through. Eric is a star.
Whoa.
Eric the firefighter he's just like a super super nice guy. And there's like an emotional moment with Joe coming to terms with the fact where he's like, "Am I a douchebag?" Like, there's not quite in those words, but like that's one of the questions he's kind of wondering. He's like, "Am I arrogant?" Like, there's really good material in there, and I love it, and great work by everybody involved in the Ponderosa stuff. But where was that this season? Why, especially if Edge of Extinction was going to end up being such a big deal, and especially if somebody who we had completely forgotten about was going to come back and win the game, how did we not get some sort of like digital series that showed us what was going on? I understand if we can't have it in the context of the episodes itself because there's just so much going on. But at the very least, even on Top Chef, you know, they don't try and put Last Chance Kitchen in the episode. They have it as its own dedicated series. And typically, that's a knock from me when I'm talking about Last Chance Kitchen and Top Chef, which is not a twist that I like very much. But I think that that's at the very least above board and giving proper attention to this side story that's happening in this series that may have a massive impact on the end result. And like, there's this, you know, the challenge to get back in this episode ultimately comes down to Joe and Chris, and Joe is right there and he loses, and Chris is right there and he wins, and they like come to each other like right afterwards, and they have like that, like, you know, that like head to head Planet of the Apes like showing of affection and appreciation for one another.
Joe tells it, "I love you, brother."
Yeah, you did it, man. And like, we have no context for that. So imagine the version of this story where we were able to see some of those relationships that were built out on the Edge of Extinction. So for the next like big idea like this, for the next big idea like an Edge of Extinction, I know that Probst tweeted out earlier in the year, like, do you guys want 90-minute episodes? Do you guys want 2-hour episodes? If you're going to take big swings like this, lock in those 90-minute episodes. We need them. We're going to need that time in order to sell these ideas effectively. Otherwise, 42 minutes just is nowhere near enough, because Underwood just shows up so underdeveloped when there's obviously a lot of story there. But I'm sure that there's a really, really compelling story there. Even if the Edge of Extinction is pretty boring, the human interactions, there's got to be stuff that you could weave.
Josh, I wonder, did production, and you were out there in the preseason, were they banking on that more people would have tapped out and that there would not be 13 people or 11 people on the Edge of Extinction by the end of this, if we would have had, you know, at any given time, you know, at the most like 5 or 6 people on the Edge of Extinction?
Well, I think this is just, it was such a wild idea that I think it was You know, it's very much of like the Ian Malcolm mold. And no, I'm not, you know, looking at the giant pile of Triceratops poop, but perhaps. But there's the scene with Ian Malcolm in Jurassic Park where he says, you only thought about if you could, you didn't stop to think of if you should. And I think that there's an element of this was a concept that they could create that could be very compelling, that could be very interesting. They had never done it before, but I think that there were just elements that were rogue elements that maybe weren't considered, like the true drive to stay out there that was exhibited by so many of these people, and really the pace that was set by Reem, which is something that's talked about in the Ponderosa videos of like, if you weren't gonna leave, then I'm not gonna leave before you, Reem, and like she really sets the pace mm-hmm. for everybody except for two people. And I can't imagine that they thought that every single person would stay. And I think that the other thing that maybe wasn't taken into account is, and it's another reason why, like, and hate is a very strong word. I'm just using the phrase of hate the game, like don't hate the player, hate the game. I think like you can't, I can't blame the jury for voting the way that they did. Maybe some of them. There's a couple of people who was like, I can't believe you didn't vote for Gavin. That was your guy. But in a lot of those cases, these people wound up on the edge of extinction, were thinking about and fantasizing about what would happen to them if they were able to get back into the game. Chris, this guy who is a huge provider for them out on the edge of extinction, apparently, allegedly, this is what people are saying. Mm-hmm. We didn't really get to see it. He's feeding them. He's, you know, comforting them. He's helping them survive. Gets back into the game and basically plays the A-plus version of what everybody is fantasizing about. Of course these people are going to vote for him to win. So I wonder how much that was taken into account as well, that I feel like somebody who comes back in Chris's position from the edge of extinction, that guy's like a pretty sure bet to at least score some major, major points. I think Devin still would have, you know, won out had he and Chris both been in Final Tribal Council together. But I think when the argument is either, you know, the guy who betrayed many of these people and sent them to the jury, or the guy who was a fellow member of the jury, mm-hmm. voting for the guy who was on the jury.
Okay.
So I don't know. I think that if they were ever to bring it back, there's obviously, I think that there's a lot that needs to be reconsidered.
Josh, we have a lot to still get to here tonight, and I'm going to start bringing in some of our feedback questions from the listeners. But first, let me take a moment and thank one of our sponsors, and those are our friends over at Stamps.com. I am a big fan of Stamps.com. I've been using it here to send out everything to the patrons when they sign up, all of these perks and incentives that we send out. We all do that with Stamps.com over here. You know what else you could do with Stamps.com, Josh?
What's that?
You can go ahead and avoid that visit to the post office next time you send a letter to yourself.
Oh my God, I hate the post office.
Well, the post office is fine. It's an important part of our federal getting letters from one place to another. But to go there,
but it's a hassle.
You know, it's a
hassle.
All
respect to the people who work at the post office. Yes.
And that's why you need Stamps.com, one of the most popular time-saving tools for small business people like myself. Stamps.com brings all the amazing services of the post office right to your computer, whether you're a small office sending invoices, an online seller shipping out products. Maybe, Jude, this could be good for Julie when she's sending out all those wooden toys. A warehouse sending out packages. Stamps.com can handle it all with ease. Simply use your computer and you can print out official U.S. postage 24/7 for any letter, package, any class of mail, anywhere you want to send. Once the mail's ready, you hand it to your mail carrier or drop it off at the mailbox. It's that simple. With Stamps.com, you also get 5 cents off every first class stamp and up to 40% off priority mail. Not to mention, it's a fraction of the cost of those expensive postage meters. Stamps.com, it's a no-brainer, saving you time and money. It's no wonder over 700,000 small business people already use Stamps.com. Right now, our listeners get a special offer. You get a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale without any long-term commitment. It's a better deal than getting at least two halves of a hidden immunity idol in your bag at the final six. Jump to stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of your homepage, type in RHAP, then enter stamps.com. Enter RHAP. That's stamps.com and enter RHAP when you click on the microphone at the top of the homepage. Just one final thing on that two-part idol. I do think what could be very interesting is if we do have some sort of future scenario, and not necessarily with an Edge of Extinction person, where the way that it was talked about, like, Rick, why did you give that half of the idol back to Chris? In the same way that Dominic not going into the Final Four fire-making challenge, we ended up bearing out. I could see a scenario where this two-halved idol ends up coming back. And similar with Ty and Scott Pollard, where, hey, can you hold my idol? And we do see somebody throw it into the ocean or throw it into the fire, a la a Dr. Mike with Lauren Rimmer's strap. And I think that what's interesting is the second time around that these things come up, whether or not, I guess that sort of ties into like the Ghost Island of it all, of can the like emergent gameplay end up shaping the way these things, and then give us these moments the second time around?
Yeah, I think I would imagine that Rick Devens has spent many nights wishing that he had that as a trophy at home, right? Like hanging on his mantle, because yeah, in hindsight, if he just kind of chooses not to give that back, Devens is probably Devens very likely could be in fight, or maybe it's Lauren and you know,
who knows?
Lauren and
who
Gavin
knows?
And
change
and
one thing, change everything.
I know, okay. Exactly.
All right, let's get into some of these feedback questions that we have, and why don't we start off with our great friend Johnny De Silvera with a question.
Hey, Rob and Josh, Johnny DeSilvera in Vancouver. In the history of Survivor, off the top of your head, can you two think of a better argument by a non-winner than what Gavin gave last night? Was there much else he could have said that could have turned the jury in his favor? Thanks. Love you, bae.
Okay. Let's talk about Gavin, who, with all this talk about resume, Gavin, seemingly with the more impressive resume, Chris with the better story and the momentum, went tip-top toes in the final three in a battle that was won by Chris Underwood. So let's just talk about this from the perspective of Gavin and what went wrong for him.
Well, I really felt for Gavin there. And I'd like to think that, you know, we talk about this a lot on like on the evolution of strategy of like, who would you vote for? Who would you like to think that you would have voted for? And I would like to think that I would have voted for Gavin. I would like to think that I would have voted for somebody who was in the game the entire time. But I probably would have been miraculously voted out even before Reem. Mm-hmm. It would be a miracle if I was even in that jury. And if I were in that jury and Chris Underwood had been feeding me for, you know, the better part of 35 days, I probably would vote for Chris Underwood. And I think that it's just really hard to account for that. And I think Gavin really underestimated that aspect of the season. And it's hard to really, really penalize him for it, and really hard to really fault him, because I think it was a very hard battle for him no matter what. But I do think in some ways, the way that he was talking about the difference between his game and the different, you know, the difference between his game and Chris's game was he's kind of inadvertently taken a bit of a dump on the experiences of many people on that jury, mm-hmm. of many people who had shared a closer experience to what Chris went through than what Gavin went through. So I think Gavin, on many other days, that is an argument that would have won, that he was making a fairly compelling points. He was, you know, probably not if he's up against like a much flashier player who also had been in the game for the vast majority at the very least. But I, the idea of like, I had never gotten a vote against me. I was very stealth. I had a strong social game. I cut people when I needed to. I think he said, I don't remember if he said this with you or if he said this with Dalton Ross. He talked about how he felt like he was coming in there with like a JT Cochran thing, where he no votes against him and he's got the timing thing down. And that may work on another season, but with this jury, he was actually making, I think, like the way that he was talking about his game versus Chris was like a really, really bad way of selling himself to this jury. To the point that, ironically enough, I think it does end up being a bit more Fishbackian in that he's talking about dynamic power structures to a meat and potatoes crowd that likes a warrior and not a wizard. Like, this felt relatively similar to me, ultimately. And I don't think it's his fault. I just think that that's the reality.
So I think one of the things that really worked against Gavin, and I think that this was also ultimately a problem for Lauren and for Victoria and for Julie, and even potentially Aurora, you know, all those people that were there with Rick Devins when Rick Devins was getting all of the airtime, you know, it was a season where we saw it was the quote unquote threats versus the goats, and the people who were the out in front quote unquote threats. Those were the people that got targeted tribal council after tribal council after tribal council. And these other players very keenly realized, hey, the more I stick my neck out and sort of take ownership of the big moves happening in the game, the more likely I am to be able to be voted out next and singled out as, oh, Gavin is the one running things. He needs to go next. So these players were able to lay in the weeds a little bit more as we saw back to back to back to back. You know, it was David Wright, and then it was Kelly Wentworth, and then it was War Dog, and then it was Ron, and it was all these players that were talking to each other about, hey, where the threats. We saw Ron and Devins and War Dog have those conversations, and these are the players that were able to adapt and say, hey, the more you say that you are one of the, you know, big players out there playing this big game, the more likely you are to go home. And then ultimately, Devins was the only person left from that group, and they just tried and tried and tried to get Devins out of the game, which only elevated him. But the mistake in that calculus was that it sort of left them vulnerable to somebody to come in and sort of take that mantle of being the biggest threat out there and then sit at the end with two of the players who were playing more of that under-the-radar game. And there were so many people on that jury that were related to the taking the big swing game, not to take anything away from Gavin, because he did make a lot of big flips in the game, taking out Eric as a big move in the game, and
he's a big part of taking out Aubrey,
right? And so he was involved in those moves, but I don't think that people saw him as the, you know, galvanizing force behind those big moves.
We
saw
galvanizing.
He wanted to go after David Wright, and he was really pushing for that at one point. And I asked Ron about this, because Ron was a vote for Chris. And what did you think about Gavin? Was it close? And he said, no, Gavin played a game in the shadows, he felt like. And that was not the kind of game that he respected. So on paper, it looks really good. But in terms of what this jury was looking for, I don't know if this was ever going to be a fit with the person coming back from the edge of extinction. And I wonder, had it been some type of scenario where the player had, like, had the threats alliance stuck, and whether it was like, you know, if it's, you know, Kelly Wentworth and War Dog, and then Chris has come back from the edge of extinction, does he get the votes in that scenario where it's players that were looked at as having played a bigger game? I wonder if it would have been a different result, as opposed to it being predetermined that whoever the person for Edge of Extinction was against in that final tribal council, that the Edge of Extinction person would automatically win.
I think the other thing about Gavin is, like, he's not a big showboat. You know, like that's not his personality. I think that that was a strength for him in terms of being able to stay alive and to never really have to deeply fear for his life in the game, never getting a vote cast against him, you know, making his way to the final tribal council in that fashion, which is a really, really, really impressive thing to do. It's so funny that, you know, he's, you know, kind of like, you know, we're just coming off of a season where like the good old Southern boy in Nick Wilson is able to win out, and here's Gavin, another good old Southern boy who is playing like who's a secret undercover super fan who's like a huge nerd for Survivor, and you might not just pick it out, maybe just doesn't fit that archetype, but ends up like almost a little more like Mike Whitey by the end of this mm-hmm. final tribal council. I think that's interesting, but he's not going to be that guy who is who's breaking news the way that Rick Devins is, or you know, is going to be just like completely wild eyed and insane like the War Dog. You know, there's sort of like a really relaxed, soothing quality about Gavin that I think makes him like a really good, agreeable person to want to be around, and mm-hmm. like makes you feel good. And he's, you know, very charming in that way. Somebody who you just want to spend time with, but maybe not somebody who you take very seriously as a threat. But I think that that was to a lot of people's detriment. And it's a shame that that wasn't reflected on more.
Yeah.
You know, just because he's not like, you know he wasn't like the barbarian out there, but that doesn't mean he wasn't a warrior. He was the assassin in the shadows. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a very valid way to play. And I think that it's really compelling to me. I don't know how much thought you've given this yet of like the breakdown in the votes and who voted for who ultimately.
Yeah.
with Chris getting a lot of votes from X comma people, and Gavin actually scoring all of his votes other than Aurora's from former Lesu, from Rick of all people, from Lauren, from Kelly Wentworth. That's a fascinating aspect of this for me, is like the comma, you know, the comma strong tide that ends up swallowing up one of its own as this huge block of former comma ends up voting for Chris instead of Gavin, a guy that they had played with the entire time. Is it that they don't recognize that this was somebody who played a really strong game? Or did the way that Gavin played, did it sting a little bit? And not to say that, like, voting one way or the other based on that is wrong or right. You vote how you vote.
Yeah.
I'm not touching the co-wrong stove again.
In the case of Victoria, that she did not vote for Gavin because she was right. mad at him. That was what she told me. I was very surprised that she didn't vote for him. So was Gavin. Victoria did not cast a vote for him. But she says, hey, nobody should trust me. And she was upset with the way. And honestly, going back to that final six vote, I still don't really understand who voted for whom. And I wish that Survivor would. I don't know why they can't give us the votes in that scenario. But Victoria felt like that Gavin had defected in some way or another that ultimately led to her going home at that vote, and it cost him a jury vote. I wonder, like, could somebody, you know, could Todd have quantum leaped into Gavin's body at that moment and won that game for Gavin? Was it winnable for him at that tribal council?
I don't think so with that jury. I don't.
It's interesting.
I don't. I think with Chris's lived in experience bunking with the jury for the vast majority of the game, that's so hard to beat, especially with such a huge jury. It's Gavin gets four votes and Chris still wins with nine. That's how many people voted for a winner. I think it was going to be a really tough sell for just about mm-hmm. anybody, unless you had, like you're talking about. I think it's a good point. I think that this was a jury that wanted to see some bravado, and it does seem like there was this. It's great that we're getting these perspectives from these people now. By the way, it was so much fun to listen to your red carpet interviews and to start reading this stuff and gleaning some of this information to see how much of an influence Ghost Island was
yeah.
on this season, of this like this big swing away from the play style of Ghost Island, with everyone having seen how that shook out and how no one, like everyone, like very just politely, like in their estimation anyway, everyone just kind of like politely stepping out of Dom and Wendell's way and letting them, you know, really get to the top and really not wanting to get in the midst of that. And what a lot of the people from Edge of Extinction are talking about in their now, you know, very thankfully existing exit mm-hmm. press is they're talking a lot about how, like, sometimes this is what Devin's told me. I haven't been able to write this up yet, but Devin said to me, like, sometimes, because I asked him, like, do you think that Edge of Extinction as a premise is too big for Survivor? I asked him that as like as a TV personality who knows what it's like to make TV. Is this just too big? And he wasn't so sure about that. He thinks that the reason oftentimes that the season felt confusing was because the gameplay felt confusing, that the gameplay felt erratic, that there was just kind of an erratic quality to the way that this game was being played. It's very fascinating. Very fascinating to me.
All right, let's go to Melanie in Pittsburgh with a question.
Hey, Rob, this is Melanie from Pittsburgh, and my question is simply this. Before the episode started, which would you have thought would have been more unlikely? Chris beats out Devins for the $1 million, or Devins beats out Wendy for the sweet, sweet Sia money? Love to hear your thoughts.
All right, well, how about that moment from last night where Jeff describes the Sia Award? I don't have that clip pulled, but he says, we've got this thing. It's called the Sia Award, and Sia gives $100,000 now for anybody who has not been following this that closely. Sia had always given a $14,000 gift to a Survivor player that in the seasons in which she had done it, because that was like the maximum tax-free contribution that somebody could make to another person without having to. That's like the maximum you could gift somebody. So it was always $14,000. But boy, either Sia really loved Rick Devins, or C is doing really well right now. But that got up to 100K. I mean, this is the same.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yes.
Breaking news.
Yeah, this is the same as the Sprint fan favorite. This is now, you're the Sia fan favorite of the season. You're playing to a vote of one.
This is runner up money, dude. That's second place.
Yeah.
Great for the Devins family. I think that they can relax a little bit, especially after Jeff put Rick on the spot in front of the country and asked him to field employment opportunities while his employers were probably watching.
Yeah, I think he got put so in an awkward spot. I mean, it's like Rob, like so I know you're married, but if any women were out there who were interested, are you fielding other like, dating opportunities? No.
Yeah, that was so great. That was one of my favorite moments of the whole night. It was so good.
Dun 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 dun.
That's danger music. Well, I'm sure a lot of people happy to see Devins make that money, and I'm sure a lot of people also very unhappy to see Devins.
I saw Becca Devins leap out of her seat. Very...
Listen, and we can all agree that we all love Becca Devins.
Yes,
right?
I got to meet her in person. Yeah, super nice.
You know, Wombat Nation, you got to support
Rick
each other.
Rick Devins was amazing in person, and I feel like that Rick Devins really got beat up over these last couple of weeks as being the presumptive winner of the game, and
that sucks.
Yeah,
it sucks for like everyone is like, oh, I'm so over this guy who is so clearly winning, and he's gonna get like completely annihilated in the fire challenge by a guy who will go on to have played 12 to 13 days mm-hmm. of Survivor. Is a fairly raw deal, but it becomes pretty tiny violin territory when you account in you know, the amount of screen time that he enjoyed and enjoyed it he did, and B, that sweet, sweet Sia money. So
yeah,
I'm not going to spend a lot of time crying for Rick as much as I
know
like
he's not everybody's cup of tea. He was so nice when I got.
He's a really nice guy. He's a really good guy
for a while last night, and was he was really, really incredible. I met Becca also, and he's very excited to come on the podcast and talk with us about his game, and I'm really looking forward to that. But in addition to Rick Devens winning the Sia money, and again, we all everybody made the same joke about Wendy was going to get the Sia money with the chickens. Sia wasn't done today.
Dun 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 dun.
Sia has tweeted this afternoon. Do you know this?
No.
Hey, at Survivor Redacted, I'm giving you 15K.
What?
Okay, so I'm letting you guess. I'm letting you guess who it is. Okay. I'll tell you.
Okay. That's it?
No, and then she explains. If I tell you what her reason is, then you'll know who it is.
Oh, wait, it's the Joe thing.
That could be a third survivor, but this is, hey, at Aurora McCreary.
Whoa!
I'm giving you 15K just for making it through foster care. I love you. Keep going. And yes, and you mentioned that. So, and Sia also had her hands on the Joe cutting his hair. Now, for a woman that famously wears a wig around, maybe that she might have had an ulterior motive with Joe cutting his hair.
She wants a Joe hair wig.
Yes. Yes, but she did tweet, hey, at JAnglin21, if you cut your hair off and donate it to a children's cancer wig-making charity, I'll give you 15K. So,
yeah, and he doubled down and said, I'll do it, but only if you put that 15K towards the charity, which is a really, really good guy thing to do from Joe, for sure.
Yeah, and Joe's a really, really nice guy, too.
He's a really nice guy, too.
Yeah. So
they're all great. They're all great.
Yeah.
Everyone's good. Everyone's good people.
And there you go. So Sia is really, you know, wreaking havoc in these Survivor finales. I mean, Sia's giving away almost as much money as CBS.
I know. Sia loves Survivor. I think that's I imagine, like, you got to think of the vast majority of Sia fans, because there's tons, probably don't know how much of, like, a Survivor nerd she actually is. Mm-hmm. That she's like willing to like donate.
Well,
like,
why doesn't she listen to the podcast?
I don't know. See if you can get
maybe
her.
She could just be a patron. That's too much.
Yeah, you need some of that Sia money.
I gotta write to Sia. Hey, Sia, you love Survivor. Why don't you just be a patron?
This should be our next
$10 a month, and you'll get in the Facebook group.
Let's get Sia in the Facebook group. I think that it's achievable. I think that you could tell her that, like, you get early access to the live show tickets.
Yeah.
Like, that's your best bet. You know,
she's a big music person and doesn't like podcasts.
If she feels like she would be like
she'd love the wand off. Come on,
being,
Sia.
Yeah, she would win the wand off. She would have five Darius Rucker hats at this point. To cover up her head with. She could join the Facebook group under like a false name, a la like the Facebook equivalent of like a hair wig on her face if she feels like she would get too much heat for being
Sia in
the
Facebook
account. Group.
Sure. All right.
Worth trying. I think it's a good idea.
Let's see. Just to talk about my night a little bit.
I want to know everything.
Yeah, I mean,
did anyone try to hurt you?
No. This was one of the more pleasant finale experiences that I had. I went out to CBS. I got through security eventually, and I got set up, and I got to my seat without too much. You can see me. I am a back row jury to the extreme on the on the right side of the bleachers.
Pumping your fists like I used to do?
You know, I forgot to do that. In the center section, the upper right, that somebody did get I saw a screenshot with
so
me.
Did I.
In the background. But very, very fun show to be there in the room for. You know, it really is a thrill to be there in person for these things. And then we got set up, and did the you know, did the whole red carpet. Everybody was you know, real nice. I got to talk to the great Reem Daly. I got to meet her in the flesh. I know you have an article with her as well up on thr.com/survivor. So I met Reem. I got the video with her and the interview with my interviews with the final six, and she was everything that I could have hoped for, Josh.
She's incredible. Isn't there, there's just like, there's something really magnetic about talking to Reem. Like, can't you now like really understand why we spent like an additional 10 minutes past our first one out interview just talking about TV?
Mm-hmm.
Like, she sucks you in. Like, you just, you want to keep talking to her forever. I adore Reem Daly.
Yeah.
And as much as I hope to never see the edge of extinction again, Reem Daly is the reason why I'm glad it happened.
Mm-hmm.
More so than I'm happy for Chris, and I am happy for me that I got weekly Reem Daly. And
don't be sad that it's over, Josh. Be happy that it happened.
Yeah, and that it may happen again. First of all, I think that Survivor would be nuts if they didn't include Reem Daly in a future second chance or something like that. Got to include Reem. Reem is very, very deserving of another
shot.
She
sounded open to it.
I feel like she would very like, she's got like that purple pants badass upside as far as being like a podcast staple.
Mm-hmm.
In the future. She sounded like she was very game to play ball with you in the future.
Yeah.
Robin, I hope she takes you up on it. I want to hear a lot of Reem.
I told
in the
her
future.
We need to hear the deep dive, and she told me, dude, you have no idea. Like, stuff went down. So, okay.
She talked about how she like became like a chess master out there. Like, that was what one of the questions I asked her is like, how did you guys entertain yourselves? And her initial response was, entertain is a big word. to speak to the level of boredom. And I guess there's a lot of chess. So
yeah.
I heard her tell you that she was like a chess master. So I want to know more about that. I want to know about the grand chess master that is Reem Daly.
Yeah.
Bet she gives 5D chess player Mike Zahalski a run for his money.
And Ron Clark came through on the red carpet. He was really, really nice also. And I had to do a lot of work with my video and uploading everything to Scott St. Pierre, super fast internet, I have to say, over at CBS in Studio City for the press. And then I got out to the party, and it wasn't super packed like it's been sometimes in the past. But, you know, everybody was very nice. You know, all of the players just about had nice things to say about the podcast. The family members were all like very complimentary about the podcast. I got to see Farm Guy 69.
No,
and
Dale.
Yeah, yeah. I went because I saw Dale at the show, and I got to say hi to him, and I was talking to him for a little bit, and then very late in the night I saw Kelly, and she was really sweet. And I said, Kelly, I talked to your dad tonight, and she said, I'm sorry. classic Kelly line. And everybody was really good.
So good.
Victoria's parents, I met Rock and Victoria's mom, and they were
amazing.
Very complimentary about the podcast. So you know, it really, really was very fun to get out there and talk to, you know, all of the fans that are out there as well.
Yeah, those are really fun nights. You know, if you're ever, you know, if you're listening to this and you're ever lucky enough to get out there, you're gonna have a blast.
Yeah.
And I'm very envious. Among the many reasons that I'm envious of your experience from last night is I'm sure that you got a lot of laughs with probably some random people you never expected to see. I would expect that there are a few of those, and also just like there's a great network of people who are always at those events that are always such a delight to see. So I'm sure it was an amazing night.
And Chris Underwood was in very good spirits, and he's a lot of fun. He was also very, very complimentary about the podcast, and that we're gonna hopefully talk to him as well. And most of the players expressed interest in wanting to talk about the season. So hope you guys are.
There's no one from this season that I would not want to hear you do a deep dive with. So that's one of the things that's really exciting about the fact that everybody made it, basically almost everybody made it to day 35.
Yeah. I don't know. We got 3 hours every single time.
The summer, baby. It's the summer. Yeah. 3 hours.
Victoria told me she wanted 2 hours. I said, fine.
It's a very specific number.
That's fine. Okay. Anything else from season 38 related?
I'm sure, because it was such a heavy season that I'm sure that there's just something that I'm not talking
okay,
about.
Okay, let me look here. Let me play a voicemail for you. This is from Eric H. has a voicemail for you, Josh.
Oh, gosh.
All right, so with all the petitions online nowadays, how many signatures do you think that an Edge of Extinction replay would get without a chance to get back into the game? And speaking of Game of Thrones, when Chris came back into the game, did he come back as the three-eyed raven, being very coy about his desire to win the game, claiming to have all of this information, and then knowing that he had to win the fire-making challenge against Rick in dramatic fashion to end up as the winner?
I became the three-eyed raven.
Oh.
More like a sand snake. Man, that's funny. The Game of Thrones petition, by the way, is insane. Obviously,
the Survivor fans have not taken a similar approach with some of these common grievances.
I think that there is there's an element of people who are happy for Chris and mad at the situation. There are also people who I think are tickled by the whole thing. Then there are the people who are insanely mad about it all. I think that there's division on this one, but I think in a bunch of tiered directions. So I think it's harder to assemble the masses. Whereas on Game of Thrones right now, it seems like either you're winning or you're dying, and there's not a ton of middle ground. I will say, and I'm not going to spoil Game of Thrones, other than if you're even passingly paying attention to anything Game of Thrones right now, you're probably aware that the most recent episode featured some sort of major controversial character moment that felt like it was a little sudden, a little jarring, maybe felt to some people a little bit unearned and a little bit out of nowhere. And that felt similar to me on Survivor Finale.
Which one is sitting better with you?
The Game of Thrones one sits
back.
Oh, just a little bit. Because I think in that case, you do at least have 7 previous seasons of things you can point at. And you can at least loosely draw a line. Here we're gonna have to do a lot of that legwork ourselves. Frankly, you, Rob, are gonna have to do a lot of that legwork in doing a lot of these podcasts and drawing those non-canonical stories to the light of day. But I think the great thing about this season, if you just kind of accept it as it lies, one of the great things about this season is it's going to be a remarkable historical artifact. You know, you're gonna ship it out to Ghost Island, and it is going to mature into something rather, rather interesting. So on that clinical level, I'm not mad that this
exists. And that's why this sits better for me than Game of Thrones, because there will never be another Game of Thrones. There is no do-over on Game of Thrones. That we invested 9 years of our lives into Game of Thrones, whereas this is going to be a new Survivor season in September. So even if this was the ultimate train wreck this season, then we just start again in September, and it's a clean slate for Survivor.
I'm really excited for Survivor to come back in September.
Let me give you one other question. Aaron wrote in and said, why can I only think that the giant mountain of pizza was the most apt metaphor for the season?
Yeah, pizza's not supposed to look like that. Neither is Survivor. Also testing the theory that even when pizza is bad, it's good.
Yeah,
that's very okay, funny.
And Taylor Cotter wrote in to say, thanks for the great coverage this season. In a horrible future where they bring back the Edge of Extinction, is the best interest for your average player to quit post-merge and just join the jury? Or is it always going to be in the best interest to just stick around no matter what? Are you better off to go to the Edge of Extinction?
Yeah, but how do you, like, you can't just, like, do you all just, like, kind of quit as a group? Like, does everyone just, like, kind of agree to quit and go to the Edge of Extinction? Mm-hmm. I don't even want to entertain it.
Okay.
I don't even want to think about the future where the Edge of Extinction is back. Done in one, I will live with this. I will live with Survivor Edge of Extinction as a singular, unique force of nature, a unicorn of a season. I can grow to appreciate it, perhaps. If we ever see this twist again, I'm not going to be pleased.
Okay.
I'm going to be upset.
All right. Let's talk about season 39 of Survivor. And Josh, we finally got our first look at Survivor Island of Idols. And I do think that a lot of people have Island of Idols. Oh, perfect. More idols. But am I correct here that the name is a bit of a double entendre?
Bit of a double entendre, yes. Very, very, very much so. I'm really limited in what I am. I'm very limited in what I'm able to talk about. Yeah, I'll obviously be able to talk about it a ton more closer to the time. But yeah, the Island of the Idols is that's where Boss and Rob and Sandra live, and they are the Survivor Idols, and they're out there.
Okay,
so we're freaking out about idols, and it's really these are the people that we're talking about.
Did Boston Rob know you in any capacity prior to you meeting him at the Island of Idols?
Well, we had met once at Run It Up Reno, and I think he vaguely knew who I was. But not like super well or anything.
Yes,
like that.
I remember the first time we were there.
Yeah. But man, I gotta say, it was such a trip to be standing across from him and Sandra both on an official Survivor beach. I've been very, very lucky to see a lot of really cool things covering the show, and that to stand next to them, and I had no idea how tall they were. 25 feet tall, something like that.
Oh, the statues. Yeah.
It's crazy.
So, Josh, crazy. May I ask, so let me just get this straight. So
yes.
Boston Rob and Sandra are living on an island together. They out here living some Bernard and Rose type life.
Yeah, no dog yet. Vincent has yet to manifest. But there are animals. I wrote a story. So he's already tweeted about it, and I'm sure that he's going to talk about it a little bit in the B&B. But Mike Bloom, the great Mike Bloom, was indeed out there on location with me. It was the two of us covering this season. And what a delight to watch Mike in that environment. And you will hear some of that at some point in the future. And he and I had separate interviews with Boston Rob and Sandra individually, but we also, he and I, when we got there, we got to observe them working on a shelter that they were trying to build, and the shelter that they're talking about building is very staggering in scope and ambition, and one wonders exactly if it will come to fruition the way that they sketched it out, in talking to us. But they talked to both of us, so the four of us were talking at once, and that interview is up at thr.com/survivor right now. If you haven't read it yet, it's a really funny slice of life scene between Rob and Sandra involving sea snakes that are getting murdered, involving chickens that are almost getting murdered, rope swings that are being built, lots of action and adventure that's happening. And if that was just like the vaguest hint of what their contributions to the season will be like, I am pretty excited. I think it's a really, really funny idea.
Yeah.
And I'm really amped up for 39. I can't talk about the cast at all. The cast has not been officially revealed. I can't talk about how much I love that cast. I'm not able to say that. So, you know, we'll have to get into that a few months from now, but I'm pretty high on 39. At least my hopes are pretty high that that could be a really, really fun season.
So, I am too. I think it's going to be really fun for the podcast. And I understand I have a different vantage point on this than a lot of the other Survivor alumni, because I think of like, well, what's going to be fun to talk about? And to me, this seems like a really fun idea for a season of
you
Survivor.
You get to do Boston Rob impressions every week. You get to do Sandra impressions every week. I imagine Russell Hantz cameos as well, because this is his nightmare season. So as far
this is the worst idea that I've ever heard of for a season.
And to add insult to injury, it's Island of the Idols.
And I could find that island, and I didn't even need a clue.
Yeah, I didn't even need a map or a tour guide.
I'm going to find that giant statue. At you, and I'm gonna rip that giant bee hat off.
Yeah, well, there is no giant bee hat on the statue, and you wonder why. It's the giant Russell Hand statue.
I took that giant bee hat. Yeah. Okay, so, but I saw a lot of pushback today from Survivor alumni, specifically. A lot of the alumni, like, what has happened to my show?
You're saying that now? Like, I mean,
yeah,
you know,
yeah. So
you know, I don't, and it really depends on how it plays. But if the Island of the Idols is more or less like a sentient ghost island, which is my understanding of it, where rather than going there and pick a bamboo and like dwell upon the curse of this artifact for a player that the new player has no emotional tether to or connection to, that we are going to see people interacting with two human beings that we as Survivor fans know very well. And I imagine that that is not going to be I don't think that it's going to be quite the same. I don't think that it's going to be too far away from like an Exile Island. At least that's my hope. I don't think that it's going to be something that completely overshadows a really, really terrific new player cast. So as long as that's not the case, I'm really on board. And I like it when Survivor does something whimsical. When they do these things that aren't taking it too seriously, I'm at least on board on paper. Like, I was really excited about Ghost Island when I was out there, and I guess we saw how that went. And I like a lot of those people individually, but I didn't feel like really, really high about the cast, like the way that I did about David versus Goliath, which I think has one of the best casts in recent Survivor memory. So it'd be a great thing if you had feelings about a cast in the way that you felt about David versus Goliath, married with a really whimsical theme. I feel like that would be a really nice setup for a good season of Survivor.
Do you feel like your fever dream on Ghost Island was in any way the inspiration for this theme?
I would not. I cannot confirm or deny. How about that?
We'll take it.
I'm under Heart and Fargo. Yeah.
So that's going to be a lot of fun when we get to the fall. Josh, anything else you want to say that you can finally get into about season 39, The Island of Idols?
No, I think I've said just about all that I can, other than I laughed so much on that trip. I was dying. I was cracking up on that trip. It was so much fun to be out there with Mike. He and I have a lot of really funny stories to share. He's going to have a lot of really, really great stories for Parade and on the podcast. Mike did some really stellar work out there that I just can't wait to see what he turns that into. And then there's a lot of people I can't wait for everyone to meet. Very excited about that aspect of this. And I'm very, very excited about the return of the podcast in the fall.
Yeah.
I think we're gonna have a very, very, very good season of first one.
That's why this podcast that we're doing right now is so fun for me, because it was a year ago on this podcast, and you were here in person when we were talking through everything with Ghost Island and the tie and Dominic and Wendell and what was it going to mean for the future. And then we've gotten to see all of that bear out in, you know, and be manifested in different ways in this season. And then you had some clips talking about, oh, the next season of Survivor, David versus Goliath. And I want to introduce you to a couple of people from that season, that you had an article about Christian and Johnny Nitro, Johnny Mundo,
right.
And then
all the Johnnies.
Yeah. So it's you know, one foot in the past, one foot in the future.
I'm very excited about the future.
Yeah. As obviously, like, I did not care for this season very
like
much.
The three-eyed
Raven.
made that
pretty clear. But I'm still excited about Survivor. And I am in that unique point where, like, I at least know a little bit of what's going to happen in the next season, right? Like, I know a season premiere's worth of information, and
you're here for it.
I cannot wait.
Okay.
I'm really excited to watch it. Very excited to tell you what I can tell you about it when I can tell you.
Okay.
About it.
And then we still have some more business to do here today, because Josh and I are going to give you the winner of the episode 13 wand off and set the stage for our final wand off of the season coming up next week. So we are only going to play one song here today, and it's going to be the song that is from the winner of last week's wand off. So if you are super wand off averse, then I don't even think this should be that painful for you.
Yeah, but you could leave.
Or you could stay. Okay. Could they replace Boston Rob's giant bee hat with a giant
with
Wiggler's
a
wombat's hat?
I should have thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't get the heads up in advance. Otherwise, I would have had a gigantic wombat's hat commissioned.
Or Sandra's going to throw the Wiggler's wombat's hat in the fire like Dr. Mike.
But if anybody wants to make the fan art of of you and me flanking the mouth of a jungle as giant statues with wombat's hats on, I mean, please, go right ahead.
Please.
Make sure that you add some Wanda herself in there, and Casey Kasem would like a cameo too.
Okay, all right. In third place this week, this was an upset to me, because I thought that this was going to be the winner this week. Bob with two B's with 13% of the vote. Don't Stop Bereaming.
Oh man, well, what a journey.
Bob
with two B's is in
he's
the
already
final
in the final one, so maybe people said, okay, Bob's already there. All right.
Yeah.
In second place with 17% of the vote, it was Tyler and Megan with Rick, Are You Good or Are You Bad?
Do we have an answer to the question yet?
Look.
Depends on who you ask.
Rick Devins was, he had a lot going on. There's a lot
what
going on.
It's such
season.
A funny line with you, where he's like, "I'm not in charge of the editing, and if I was in charge of the editing, there'd be a lot more."
Yeah,
Rick
he's
Devins.
Like, "I'm unhappy with the edit too. I feel like there should have been more me."
So bad. That is just like the Night King, arms outstretched at Hard Home. Bring it on. So you know.
Okay,
we know how that worked out.
And the winner of the episode number 13 wand off, and it was a little bit of a runaway with 39% of the vote, it was Michael and Kimberly. Welcome to the final wand off for Fixer Upper.
What's the issue here? Why can't you root for Rick the Kool-Aid Man?
Is it the dad bod way he walks?
Or the yank the way he talks?
Or the weird breaking news music he ad-libs?
And although we know he's not to blame, he snags the airtime just the same.
But you cannot overlook the way he shimmied up that tree.
Okay.
That's really, really, really great.
Well, Michael and Kimberly will play us out on the end of this episode. And Josh, that's going to do it for our Edge of Extinction proper coverage. I hope to start getting into some post-game interviews next week.
I'm really excited to hear them.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Do you have anything officially lined up yet, or are you still working on
scheduling?
Nothing
officially lined up. You know, sometimes that I end up getting one real quick while people are in town, like I did with Christian last year. And no, I think I'm going to give everybody a chance to sort of exhale.
Catch your breath. Yeah,
and,
sure.
And myself especially. You know, just like take it easy for a couple of days and then start to gear back up. But
that sounds nice, man. That sounds so good.
We've still got a very busy podcast schedule. Of course, we still have one more actually Survivor podcast. I said this was it. This Week in Survivor. We are coming up with a very special guest on This Week in Survivor coming up. Going to record that on Monday night and show that for you guys on Tuesday. Don't forget the B&B is going to be back this week with Mike and Liana together for the first time in a couple of weeks with special guest Eric Stein. We will have the Why Chris Won with David Bloomberg and Jessica Lewis, which should be a very interesting conversation, perhaps a short
David's
show.
David's so mad.
He's so mad?
You thought I was mad. I am very curious.
I didn't think
curious
you were
here.
Mad.
Yeah. I'm more like disappointed dad, as I as I saw one remark from somebody. But I think David's going to be turned up.
Good. Okay. That's good.
Destination listening. Yeah.
That's good. So we will be on the lookout for that. Okay. Jordan Kalish on This Week in Survivor. Robin Akiva need a podcast coming up this weekend. We're going to get into tackling subjects that are maybe too beloved. We'll tell you what's wrong with all your favorite things coming up.
Stay away from Lost. Do not touch it.
I don't know if Lost qualifies as too beloved anymore.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
So
an appropriate amount.
We're be on the lookout for that. Plus, News AF will be back again on Tuesday of this week. Be on the lookout for that. And then the Amazing Race coverage also returns on Thursday after a one-week hiatus for the Amazing Race because of the three-hour Survivor episode.
And then next week, you and I are getting back together.
Yes.
We've got some business to take
care of. The final wand off is coming, and so we are recording that, likely Wednesday of next week?
That's what it's looking like right now. Yeah, we'll see what happens with Game of Thrones, but we're aiming for Wednesday. I can imagine a world in which we're doing this on Thursday next week.
Okay. But let's just set a hard deadline, okay? So we will give the wand off combatants until midnight
Wombatons.
Midnight Pacific time to get your final wand offs in for the
on which day tonight?
No,
Midnight Pacific when?
Tuesday. On Tuesday. Is that,
okay,
is it Tuesday?
Tuesday. I don't think so. Okay. Unless I missed it.
Midnight Pacific Tuesday night coming up of this next week. We have a stacked field. It's gonna be Bob with two B's, Alex G, DJ LaBelle Klein, and Corey B together.
Yes.
Amazing Maisie.
Yes.
Tyler Jacob Jones.
Yes.
Adam B.
Yes.
Robin from Rochester.
Yep.
Graham from the Bay.
Yep.
And Michael and Kimberly. Those are your final wand-off combatants. It's a real Edge of Extinction field.
It, you know, anyone could win. Anyone could come in, you know, for all we know, Shut Up Tim is going to show
come in
up
for the Edge of Extinction.
Yeah, and get voted in with like a really killer song.
Yeah.
And he's just gonna blow us all away.
Are we accepting any honorable mentions about the season?
Listen, if you've got nothing to do over the next few days and you just want to record a wand off, and if it's hilarious and if we've got time, I would not be opposed to playing it on the air. You're not in contention for the jacket, but I would hand out one additional hat this season. How about that? Just a dealer's choice, a wiggler's choice.
Okay, so you're saying that there would be two votes in the final ballot.
Yeah, you can win. You can win the Edge of Extinction losers bracket. Not to the Edge of Extinction, not to call you a loser, but you can win the.
You know what? When I felt like that, I wasn't even in the final wand off. I felt like a loser.
You can compete for a hat, and you can pick either the standard blue or the trucker hat, whichever you'd prefer.
As long as it's not a little bee hat.
Yeah, yeah. So we can do an honorable mention bracket.
So that'll be next week as well. So a jam-packed first week of the Survivor off-season coming up. So very excited about all of that. Of course, to the final wand-off entrance, 2 minutes and 30 seconds is the limit for the final wand-off. So
for the final wand-offers, for the honorable mentions, keep it to the minute would be great.
A minute is perfect. That's real good. Okay, all right. Josh Wiggler, of course, my co-collaborator on the evolution of strategy, and there is no better time to dive into the evolution of strategy than the off-season. And if you're wondering how we got here to Survivor 39, the Island of Idols, take a look back at the trajectory that Survivor took over its first 30 seasons with the 300 hours that are the evolution of strategy. It is a crowd pleaser. Many people are on their third, fourth, fifth time listening through.
Many people listen to the evolution of strategy and then go on to win Survivor, apparently.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
This has happened before, you know?
I mean,
this is not a first.
Not to pat ourselves on the back at all, but...
Let's do it. Anyway.
So, all right. Chris Underwood.
Yeah.
Okay. Add another Survivor winner to the list.
Yeah.
Nick Wilson.
Yeah.
Okay. Pretty sure Adam Klein is... Does that evolution strategy?
At the very least, he's a super fan RHAP. I'm pretty sure he listened to some TEOS.
I know he listened to the 49 Laws of Survivor that I did with Stephen Fishback.
Yeah. I mean, people who have had great success on Survivor, at the very least, evolution of strategy people. Zeke, David Wright, plenty of people. Gabby was a TEOS fan. Christian is a TEOS fan.
Don't forget about Laurel, Survivor finalist.
Laurel, of course.
Okay.
So, you know, maybe... There's a correlation.
Yeah.
Not saying causation, but perhaps a correlation.
Okay. Laurelation. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, I hear that's bad. evolutionofstrategy.com.
Okay. Be on the lookout for that. Of course, the first chapter, all about Survivor Borneo, is completely free to get you started on the evolution of strategy. All right. Of course, we couldn't do all this without the help of our patrons. Rob has a website.com/patron. Stay in the know about everything that we have going on. Plus, we've got links to all of the international Survivor that's coming up. Shannon Gates and Mike Bloom are going to have the Survivor South Africa coverage.
Yes.
Going. And if you've never watched an international season of Survivor, then I highly recommend checking out Survivor South Africa. And it's going to be a completely different experience. And may not be as crazy as our modern day Survivor, and that might be just what you're looking for. So give it a shot. Survivor South Africa is starting now, and Survivor Australia is going to be premiering later on this summer. And of course, Big Brother is just around the corner as well. But that's we've got those links available in our patron group. Rob has a website.com/patron for all of that. Josh, and then the big Game of Thrones finale is coming up on Sunday night. Stephen Fishback and I will be live after the finale. You will be hard at work over at thr.com/Game of Thrones. At some point after you dig out of the rubble a la Arya Stark, then you and I will get together for our Game of Thrones finale feedback show sometime next week as well.
Yeah, a lot going on. This is typically the time of year where I like to go off on a vacation, but I will be in the Westerosi trenches for the foreseeable future, and it is what it is.
Okay,
it is what it is. But I'm excited for the Game of Thrones finale, and we'll parse through that all on post-show recaps next week. And I'm very excited for what sounds like the makings of a fairly epic final wand off. So. We got good stuff planned for next week. We're going to have a fun time.
All right. thank you all so much for listening to all of our coverage over the season. It was a crazy season. It was a crazy bunch of podcasts, but I think that we did have a lot of fun along the way, and this was a wild and crazy outcome, and I just hope that none of this is making you that mad, because it's still just a TV show.
It's just a TV show.
Yeah. Okay? And it's a TV show that pushes the reset button every 6 months. So hang
that's
in there.
The best part about Survivor. And that's the reason why it is still on the air all these years
one
later.
Time
is
slot.
Because, you know, it's the core premise and the core, you know, pillars of Survivor are so strong, and the concept is so great. And even like the crappiest seasons, there's stuff that you can enjoy. And I feel like the bottom tiered seasons for me, like there's like I could hold them in one hand, you know, like it's very grippable. The vast swath of stuff that I love about Survivor, I couldn't even give it a full bodied embrace. There's just so much. So I'm pretty pumped about where we might be going next, even if less pumped about this particular season, but I'm excited to hit reset and see what the future holds.
All right, so thank you so much, Josh Wiggler. Follow at Round Howard on Twitter. I am at Rob Cesternino. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
What's the issue here? Why can't you root for Rick the Kool-Aid Man?
Is it the dad bod way he walks,
or the anchor way he talks,
or the weird breaking news music he ad-libs?
And although we know he's not to blame, he snags the airtime just the same.
But you cannot overlook the way he
shimmied up that tree. So he's a bit of a fixer-upper. Rick's got a few flaws.
When they voted him out,
snubbed his torch out. It seems to contradict Survivor laws.
So he's a bit of a fixer-upper. But this we're certain of, Rick is playing harder than the rest, and that's something we can love.
Can we please acknowledge the truth of this? Becca is the best actual devil here.
I'll say, so tell me, dear, is it the way that he votes wrong,
or his analogies are long,
or that he openly suggested he is poop? What?
Or how the jury seems to love him, since he's technically one of them,
or the way that he gets credit for the other's moves?
He's just a bit of a fixer-upper. He's got a couple of bugs. You must admit Rick is well equipped when it comes to singing those challenge balls. So he's a bit of a fixer-upper. There's nothing we can do. We should just embrace this fixer-upper. One more week, but we'll be through.
We're not saying you should love him, cause opinions are hard to change. We're only saying that in the end,
Survivor's just a game.
People tweet harsh things when they are mad or scared or stressed. But at the end of the day, Survivor is the best. This show is still the best.
Survivor has worse fixer-uppers.
There simply is no doubt.
Heidi,
Humpy,
Foley,
and many others.
Like Russell and his stupid hat. Some players are fixer-uppers, but when push comes to shove,
any fixer-upper players, it's still a silly show that we can
still love.
Hey, Josh, can I run this theory by you?
It's fine. You know what, dude? It's fine.
Love.
This post-finale edition of The Wiggle Room is sponsored by our friends over at True Car. Every car comes with its share of stories. That ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up a first date, that luxury package you got after a big promotion, or the mileage you save by riding your bike all summer long. And while you can't put a price tag on your stories now with True Car, you can at least find out what your car is worth when it's time to sell it or to trade it in. Just go to True Car and simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Then answer a few questions. Navigation and moonroof, watch as they're going to bump up your value. High mileage, you already knew it was going to cost you, but now you know how much it's going to ding your wallet so you can plan ahead. And once you're finished, you'll get a True Cash offer sent in minutes, which you can take to a local certified dealer to cash out or to trade in. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out True Car today. True Cash offer not available in all areas.